Vicatra podcasts conversations for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vicatra AI.
Welcome back to the deep dive.
Today we are cracking open a concept that I think many people assume is quite dry, maybe a bit distant.
Yeah.
Geopolitics.
Yeah, when you hear that word, what comes to mind? Probably, you know, big maps and war rooms, maybe satellite images, presidents pointing at things.
Exactly. Serious people making serious decisions far away. That's the image.
And that image, that very top-down, almost technical view, is exactly what we're going to challenge today. We're using the work of Klaus Dodds, especially his book, Geopolitics. A very short introduction.
Okay, so we're moving past this idea that, you know, geography just dictates everything.
That's the plan. Because here's the, well, the core idea, the hook, really. Geopolitics, according to Dodds, isn't just some remote game played by generals.
Right.
It's actually a dynamic, very persuasive practice of representing the world. It's powerful storytelling, essentially.
Storytelling. So it shapes our reality every day, like in the news we watch or even movies.
Absolutely. It's baked into the news reports, the political speeches, even the films we consume. Our mission today is to kind of deconstruct that traditional view.
And show how global power is shaped much more by these narratives, these representations, than just by, say, mountains and rivers on a map.
Precisely. It's about who gets to draw the map, sure. But maybe even more critically, who gets to write the script? Who defines the good guys and the bad guys on that map?
Okay, that's a fascinating angle. Let's unpack this. Who is Klaus Dodds? Why should we listen to him on this?
Well, Klaus Dodds is a leading figure. He's a professor of geopolitics at Royal Holloway, University of London, and he's absolutely central to what's known as critical geopolitics.
And you mentioned he didn't just report on this critical turn, he actually shaped it. What does that mean for his perspective? How does that background influence his critique?
It gives him a really unique viewpoint. He was one of those thinkers who started asking different questions. Instead of just advising governments on how to gain power, the old way, he and others began analyzing how geopolitical knowledge itself gets created.
Ah, so not just using the knowledge, but questioning where it comes from and who benefits.
Exactly. Who produces it? Which institutions? For what purpose?
Yeah.
That's the critical lens.
And what makes his work particularly interesting, you said, is his range. He studies the polls, but also pop culture. Seems like quite a jump.
It is, but it's incredibly insightful. He looks at the high-stakes geopolitics of the Arctic and Antarctica, where climate change is rewriting the rules. But then, yeah, he also analyzes James Bond films.
James Bond! Seriously?
Seriously. And that combination is what makes his work so accessible. He uses these diverse, really relatable examples. It helps bridge the gap between dense academic theory and, you know, the world we actually live in.
So his goal isn't just academic critique. It's about helping us become more informed citizens.
That's definitely a big part of it. Translating these complex ideas so we can all think more critically about the world stage and our place in it.
Okay, let's talk about the book itself there, Geopolitics. A very short introduction. You said it takes us on a journey. Where does it start?
Starts, quite logically, with the foundations. The classical thinkers from the late 19th, early 20th century, people like Halford Mackinder, Alfred Thayer Mahan.
Right, the big names you might have heard of. Land power versus sea power, that sort of thing.
Exactly. They were searching for a kind of science of statecraft. They believed you could use geographical facts, like where oceans and land masses are, to figure out universal laws of international power.
And those ideas were hugely influential for a long time. But that history, you're saying, is just the setup for Dodd's main point.
It's the necessary background, because the book's real ambition is the critical turn. The idea that geopolitical knowledge isn't just found out there, like discovering a new element, it's actively produced.
Produced by powerful institutions like governments and the media.
Uh-huh. And this leads to the central concept, geopolitics as a discourse.
Okay, discourse. What does that mean in this context? It's not just conversation, right?
No, it's more structured than that. It's a powerful way of speaking, writing, and importantly, visualizing global space. It's the framework that justifies foreign policy and defines international issues.
So, like, if a government successfully labels another country a rogue state, that's not just rhetoric.
It's a geopolitical act. It frames the issue, sets the terms of debate, often limits the policy options considered acceptable, Calling a region a terrorist hotbed does immense political work before any policy is even discussed.
Wow. So the label itself creates kind of permission structure. I think I'm starting to get it. The axis of evil example springs to mind.
Absolutely. That's a classic case of geopolitical discourse in action. It's performative. It does something in the world. And the book explores this across different areas, popular geopolitics, feminist perspectives, even environmental issues. It shows how this way of thinking permeates so much.
Let's dig deeper then into that core contrast. Classical versus critical geopolitics, because that really seems to be the fundamental shift Dodds is highlighting.
It really is. Classical geopolitics, as we said, was top-down, focused squarely on the state, and often quite deterministic about geography. The idea was almost that the map tells you what a country must do.
And Mackinder's heartland theory is a prime example.
A perfect example. Back in 1904, he argued that whoever controlled the vast Eurasian landmass, the heartland, held the key to controlling the world.
That sounds quite grand, almost abstract. Did policymakers actually, you know, use this theory decades later? Was it practical?
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't just abstract theorizing.
Yeah.
Mackinder's idea became the intellectual bedrock for the U.S. strategy of containment after World War II.
Containment. You mean containing the Soviet Union?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The entire Cold War strategy, from the U.S. perspective, was largely about preventing the Soviet Union from dominating that Eurasian heartland, just as Mackinder had warned.
Mm.
So a theory from 1904 directly shaped global policy for over 40 years.
That's incredible. A theory literally writing the script for history. But critical geopolitics, you're saying, isn't about writing a better script for power.
No, it's about analyzing how those scripts get written in the first place. Which brings us to what Dodds calls geopolitical codes.
Okay, geopolitical codes. What are those? Like a state's playbook?
That's a good way to put it. They're essentially the narratives a state uses to define itself and others.
Hmm.
Who are our friends? Who are our enemies? What counts as a danger, a threat?
And the axis of evil phrase from President Bush in 2002 that fits this perfectly.
It's perhaps the most cited modern example. Dodd sees it as a masterful, if controversial, piece of geopolitical scripting.
Why masterful? What did it achieve, geopolitically speaking?
Well, think about it. It took three very different countries, Iran, Iraq, North Korea, with different histories, different regimes, different goals.
And lumped them together.
Exactly. It homogenized them into one simple, easily understood, and morally loaded threat. This wasn't objective analysis. It was narrative creation.
And that narrative then simplified the world, made it seem black and white, and arguably created the justification needed for action, like the Iraq invasion.
That's the critical argument, yes. It turned messy reality into a clear story that resonated with the public and policymakers.
Speaking of stories that resonate, let's shift to the cultural side. Popular geopolitics. You mentioned James Bond. How much do we really learn about the world from entertainment?
According to Dodds, a huge amount. He argues we often absorb more about our place in the world, about who the Yusuf Palace and them are, from a blockbuster movie or a news broadcast, than from, say, reading a formal government strategy paper.
So pop culture is like a factory for our geopolitical imagination.
That's a great phrase for it, yeah. It manufactures our shared assumptions about how the world works, who the threats are, who the heroes are.
And James Bond, how does he fit in? Is he just entertainment or something more?
Dodds uses Bond as a kind of barometer of Western geopolitical anxieties over decades. Think about the villains' Bond fights.
They change, right? Soviets in the Cold War.
Right, Smirish. Then it becomes Spectre, kind of stateless terrorists, sometimes rogue states, later maybe cyber threats or billionaire villains. The enemy evolves, mirroring real-world perceived threats.
And Bond himself, the sort of suave, technologically advanced Western agent,
is always positioned as the force for restoring order against these foreign, often stereotyped, chaotic threats. We watch the movie, we're entertained, but we also absorb a subtle lesson about who's in charge, who's dangerous, and who gets to fix things.
That shapes a very powerful, almost unconscious worldview for millions. But Dodds doesn't stop there. He applies his critical lens to areas often overlooked in traditional geopolitics, like feminist perspectives.
Right. Feminist geopolitics does crucial work. It asks us to pay attention to the language used in international relations. How often is it deeply gendered?
Gendered? How so?
Think about metaphors of nations being vulnerable, needing protection, the state acting as a kind of masculine protector. Feminist geopolitics questions whose experiences and voices get prioritized in these narratives and whose get ignored.
And a key example Dodds discusses is the justification for the 2001 invasion of Afghanistan, the need to save Afghan women.
Exactly. That narrative, the idea of a rescue mission, was incredibly powerful in garnering public support in the West.
It framed the conflict in moral, almost chivalrous terms.
Yes, a kind of masculine intervention to save victimized women. Feminist analysis would point out how this narrative, while highlighting real suffering, also served specific strategic goals and potentially obscured other motives or consequences. It diverted attention.
Okay. And finally, the environment. This is fascinating because we often see climate change as purely scientific, maybe economic. How does it become geopolitical? Dodds calls environmental issues threat multipliers.
That's a key concept. Take the melting Arctic. This isn't just an environmental story. It's redrawing the geopolitical map in real time.
Oh, because the ice is disappearing.
Precisely. As the sea ice vanishes, new shipping routes open up, like the famous Northwest Passage. Suddenly, that's viable. Huge reserves of oil, gas, and minerals under the seabed become potentially accessible.
Which means
intense competition. Russia, the U.S., Canada, China, European nations, they're all eyeing the Arctic's strategic and economic potential. What was once a frozen periphery is becoming a central hotspot for geopolitical maneuvering.
So the environment isn't just a backdrop anymore. It's actively changing the stage and the rules of the game.
It's a direct catalyst for new power struggles and strategic calculations. Climate change is a geopolitical issue.
Okay, so stepping back from these specific examples, if we had to synthesize the big overarching themes from Dodd's work, what would they be? What are the main takeaways?
I think there are three core messages. First, and maybe most fundamental, is that geopolitics is storytelling, not science. Geography matters. It sets the stage. But political actors construct the geopolitical reality. They write the scripts, like the War on Terror, to justify actions. We need to stop seeing these scripts as objective truth.
Right. Recognize the narrative for what it is. What's the second theme?
The crucial importance of the power of representation. Maps aren't neutral objects. The way a map is projected, the colors used, what's included or left out, these are all political arguments. Think about the Mercator projection making Europe look huge. These choices shape our perception of who's powerful, who's central, who's marginal.
So question the visuals, question the framing in the media constantly.
Constantly. And the third theme is actually quite hopeful. Anti-geopolitics and contestation. Official state narratives, these geopolitical codes, are never the only story.
Meaning they get challenged.
All the time. By activists, by social movements, by alternative media, by ordinary people. Think about the massive global protests against the 2003 Iraq War. That was a direct challenge to the official geopolitical script. So geopolitics is always a site of struggle, a contest over the narrative.
That's a really important point. It's not just top-down. Dodd's writing seems very clear. Are there any specific lines or statements that really capture these core ideas?
Oh, definitely. The book is full of concise, powerful statements. One that really encapsulates the critical view is, geopolitics is not a timeless objective science. It is the practice of representing the world in a certain way to achieve a political objective. It is, above all, a form of persuasive storytelling.
That nails it. Persuasive storytelling. What about the popular culture angle?
For that, this one stands out. We learn as much about our place in the world from a James Bond film or a CNN news report than we do from a formal government policy document. It really forces you to think about where your own ideas came from.
That's provocative. And the point about maps.
The classic formulation is, the map is not the territory, but the map shapes how we understand and act upon the territory. It's a constant reminder that representations have real-world power. They guide our actions.
So let's bring this home for the listener. If you've absorbed all this, how does it equip you differently to navigate the world, the news, politics? What's the practical application?
Well, first off, it dramatically boosts your media literacy. It gives you a new set of questions to ask. When you see a news report about a conflict, you don't just absorb the information passively.
You start asking, okay, what's the narrative here? What geopolitical code is being used? Why is this country being shown in this particular light? Who benefits from me seeing it this way?
Exactly. It makes you an active decoder, not just a passive consumer. And that leads directly to informed and critical citizenship.
How so?
When a leader gives a speech justifying intervention or imposing sanctions or forming an alliance, you're now equipped to deconstruct the script they're using. You can spot the historical echoes, the simplified good versus evil framing, the strategic interests hidden beneath the surface story.
Which empowers you to ask tougher questions, to hold leaders more accountable.
Precisely. And maybe on a more personal level, it encourages you to rethink your own map. We all carry around mental maps, assumptions about certain countries or cultures. Where did those ideas come from?
Were they shaped by a movie I saw as a kid? A headline I glanced at years ago.
Right. Dodds encourages that kind of reflection. Are my ingrained ideas about place X or people Y actually based on reality, or are they echoes of old geopolitical scripts I absorbed without realizing it?
For me, the biggest takeaway is just how much the world we experience is actively made through these powerful stories. It's not fixed. It's constantly being written and rewritten. Realizing that makes you see news headlines and political speeches in a totally different light.
Absolutely. And for me, the most valuable lesson, the real core of critical geopolitics, is that skepticism is a virtue. Never just accept a geopolitical story, whether from your own government, another government, or the media at face value.
Always ask.
Always ask. Yeah. Who is telling this story? Whose interests does it serve? And what actions is this story trying to make seem natural or necessary? That kind of critical questioning is, I think, an indispensable skill for navigating the 21st century.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.